once. Not sex, sect. Don't get me in any kind of trouble here. I saw some glazed eyes at that point. Somebody just grabbed their hat and handbag. Sect. And so the idea was they wanted me to come on to debate about this issue. So what they do in these programs is the researcher calls you and says, Reverend Edwards, can we discuss this? The idea is to see where you're coming from on the broadcast means a good argument. So, she went through and decided at the end of the day, yep, we would like you to come on Newsnight tonight. So just a couple more questions, he said, before we end the conversation. Can you tell me your address? We can send a car for you. Give her my address, Buckingham Palace, blah, 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 central London. Okay, how long? That was a joke. How long will it take for the car to reach the studios? I said, well, that time of night, 35 minutes, okay, fine. One more question, Reverend Edward, she said. Are you colored? And I thought, what? What? What on earth is being a black bloke got to do with appearing on your show, on your program? I was so incensed. I almost said to her, look, I am a black bloke. We don't say colored, we say black. And anyway, I'm the leader of the Evangelical Alliance, and most people in the Evangelical Alliance are a bunch of white honkies. I didn't say that. That would be racist. That would be racist. So I politely toned it down from my head to my mouth, and I said, listen, I find that quite offensive. I don't see what being a black person has to do with coming on the BBC Newsnight tonight. She was absolutely distraught and apologetical. She said, oh, I'm really sorry, Reverend. I'm terribly sorry, she said. I didn't say collared, I said collared. Are you going to wear a dog collar? So it's the only joke I have. And so what I try to do is provide sermon themes, which goes with the joke. So the art of translation is this, that the message can go missing in the transmission. And John is concerned here that the message doesn't go missing. I love a quote I came across in my studies from Jürgen Moltmann, a German theologian. Here's what he said. The mission of the church is before God, before men and women, and before the future. I love this. I love this. That in terms of translating this God we worship and serve, our mission is first of all before God. The life appeared, said John. We have seen it and testify to it. And we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. And the mission of the church begins with the revelation of God. That God has turned up in the pages and the reality of human history and the particularities of human experiences and declared himself to be God. Now, this is quite inconvenient because God is not positioning himself with other gods or other people. And for the Christian tradition, this is offensive. It is exclusive. It is a claim about the reality of who God is, which actually defies a kind of inclusivity. God turns up and says, in the beginning, God created. There's a kind of intolerance about that. But the mission of the church is first and foremost before God. And whilst that is reassuring, encouraging, comforting, empowering, that you and I begin our mission in the presence of God, an audience with one. This consoling, empowering reality sets us in opposition with everybody else if we're not careful. This is the scandal of the cross. That our mission is not determined by cultural trends. That our mission is not mandated by political expedience. that our mission is not determined by the current prevailing norms of human morality or ethics, but that we stand before a God who has determined what the world should look like in its relationship across cultures and time zones. God steps in. The mission of the church is first of all before God. I have to tell you, as I do stuff in public from time to time, I sometimes find that quite inconvenient. It can be very inconvenient if you're standing to represent marginalized communities. It can be very inconvenient if you are Christian Aid or a Tear Fund or a Compassion or a group of Christians in the local community who stand before our local councillors and politicians and who have to answer to the decrees and the requests of a democratic society whose morality is generated by consensus opinion to say our mission begins with God is not always convenient, to be honest. But that's where we start. That's where our energy comes from. That's where our mandate comes from. The ministries around this room and across the way, which we will see and support and pray for and become involved with, our mandate begins with God. And this is non-negotiable. If this isn't true, then that makes us a part of the cultural shift which happens in any culture or society. The mission of the church begins with God. That's our mandate. That's our strength. That's our challenge. And translating this God becomes impossible for us if we are not, first of all, fully in agreement with the fact that we are emissaries of this God, that which we have seen and heard and touched. But we are missionaries before humankind. So John says, we proclaim to you what we have seen and heard so that you may also have fellowship with us, and our fellowship is with the Father and his Son, Jesus Christ. The great thing about our faith is that it is an invitational faith. God is seeking to draw people to himself through Jesus Christ, and it's an invitational faith. We ought never to forget that. I don't know how you feel about this, but one of the things I sometimes fear is that we empty the cross of its meaningfulness when we start with social action and not with the call for redemption. I don't know how we keep that balance in the 21st century between a God who still says there is salvation in no other. That's really challenging. But the mission of the church is before God and then before human beings. We become the intermediaries. We become the translators of this God of eternal love and concern and passion for the world. But it really begins with a change of heart. My prayer is that Christians, authentic Christians in the 21st century, who wish to translate the reality of God, will never go soft on a call for the forgiveness of sin, for redemption. Hey, we may not want to use the word sin every single day. We don't need to start there. But the meaning of life, as Alpha would suggest, is intrinsically linked with this responsibility of the mission of the church before men and women. To say to people, there is an alternative to a life of sin and sinfulness, is a part of the mission. It's a part of the glorious mission God has given to us. But hey, here's the thing. It doesn't stop there. I know there are lots of Christians who wish it did. We just preach sin. We're happy about it, and we don't care if anybody else is or not. We just love to tell people they're sinners because we feel good about that. We won't do anything about the suffering. We won't do anything about hunger. We won't do anything about refugees. We won't do anything about the need for development in other parts of the world or indeed in our patch of God's kingdom right here in the UK. But that's not the gospel either, because our mission calls us to the real needs of real people. That is why it's so fantastic to see this display of Christian concern from debt and issues of hope, and it's around the room. My friends, again, Christian Aid, Tear Funds and the CAFODs and these incredible organizations. I was with some people last year who were celebrating the work of the Cinema Network, 47 million beneficiaries in the UK, 1.9 million volunteers, £3 billion worth of support if you measure it by the minimum wage. Look at the work of street pastors and the Les Isaac impact, as it were. This is amazing. How do you translate the love of God? We translate it because God is committed to the forgiveness of sin, but we translate the love of God and the reality of God to a world because this God who is prepared to forgive us isn't willing to leave us unredeemed in poverty, unredeemed in crime, unredeemed in a lack of proper education for our children here or abroad, unredeemed in insufficient health service, unredeemed as refugees are being brutalized and abused by oligarchs across the world, unredeemed as trafficking escalates. This God we serve, who calls us, is never satisfied with that kind of redemption. This redemption, which translates God to the world, is a full one. This idea of salvation starts at the cross and the forgiveness of sins, and it touches every area of life. And it's prepared to say, we want to serve people in Hastings, even if they don't come to our church, even if they never become Christians. This is a part of the program of the revelation of God to the whole human condition. We don't feed you to become a member. We don't give you housing so that you'll become a good Baptist. We minister to you because God has revealed himself as a God of love to all people, in all places, at all times. Here's my final thing. We're called before God, before men and women, and before the future. Probably got another 3 minutes of my time. But I love that. You know what the future means? The future means hope. Hope. Hope is God's gift to every person. And for the Christian, this is about eschatological hope. It's a nice word they taught me in Bible college a long time ago, and I like to use it whenever I get the chance. It's that this God is taking us to a future beyond suffering. Yes, he is. But this hope of the kingdom isn't just for Christians to escape old age and creaky backs. This hope of the kingdom is about the forgiveness of sin. It's about the possibility of heaven, which we don't tend to talk about much these days. But it's also about hope for tomorrow. I remember when they had the big tsunami some years ago. I went with a Christian Relief and Development Agency a year after the tsunami in Asia to see some of their work. And they took me to a field with a big red tractor in the middle of this field. And they took me to a meeting of Hindus and Muslims and Christians and people of other faiths meeting together to celebrate what this Christian Relief and Development Agency had done in providing them with a tractor to rework the soil. And I looked at that big red tractor and I thought, hope is a red tractor in the middle of a field. And they took me to see a woman whose home had been devastated. Her husband got drowned. She was alive with her kids, everything else taken away from her. And we took a photograph of her under a tree by a cow. And I thought, hope is a cow, and I'm not being rude. Hope is a fishing boat. Hope is transferring someone from the jungle to a housing plot. Hope is running water. Hope is an education for my child. And if there's one group of people who should understand a theology of hope made practical, it's Christians. God has called us before himself, before men and women, and before the future. And you know, in this part of translation, I'm closing with this, John, is your unity. John 17 is about translation. Lord, make them one. Why? So that the world might get it. You being here today is a part of the mission of God. Thank you so much. God bless you.